downloading the playbooks into their head, making sure that they have the right training, having the touch points with you to make sure that the client results stay in order. Well, your focus goes somewhere else because you delegated. We did what we were supposed to do. We got it off of our plate. Now we can go focus on the high leverage activities that we need to do. And we don't really need those touch points anymore with the person we just brought on, which is the furthest thing from the truth. You need more touch points. You need more trainings. You need to have a lot of time with your media buyers so they can start thinking like you, so they can start acting like you.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Epi. This is going to be another epic Epi, and it's Epi. That's going to be a thing. Like, people talk about pods, and that became a thing. That's old shit. That's 2023 shit. 2024 shit is called Epis. And I'm just something I'm going to swear about. Josh, how you doing, buddy?
Doing great, man. I'm ready to get some merch made that says Epic Epi on it. Like a nice hat or t-shirt, hoodie, something, you know? I think they'd sell out.
I think we might just have to make our own new podcast called The Epic Epi. And it's basically just me, you, and Mr. Beast. That's it.
Yeah, I'm sure Jimmy would be down, you know? I'm sure we can convince him.
He just got a massive contract with Amazon. Did you see this?
Yeah, for a TV show, right? It's a game show, I think he's doing.
Yeah, 1,000 people. It was like $5 million purse. I was like, what? The real loser in this all is YouTube. YouTube dropped a bag. Like, how did YouTube not win that contract? He was literally making everything for you. And the whatchamacallit game that he made.
Squid Games.
The Squid Games. Like, mm-hmm. How did YouTube not be like, yo, we got you on the next one?
It's crazy, man. Yeah, I don't know. Something about Google, man. They're just overly protective of, I think, profit margins. And YouTube's a massive profit center for them, I think. So I don't know. I think Amazon's willing to take a lot more risks than Google is. So I don't know. I couldn't even tell you.
I know. I want to know, though. But this week, we have a really interesting topic. What are we talking about today?
I think we're going down the lane of service offerings and some of the biggest mistakes that all agencies need to avoid when it comes to service offering. And where we want to talk about this is not necessarily like $100 million offers where it's like, hey, we're setting up an offer to attract clients. And we're talking about scalable service offerings like, hey, your paid media offering, your retention offering. When is the right time to scale that up? What are some of the challenges that you're going to have when you need to bring on new teammates? Some of the challenges that you're going to have when bringing on more clients? And what is the most scalable service offerings in our space? And, you know, Shaq, you're one of the best people to talk about this because, one, you've acquired agencies to bring in new offerings and scale new offerings, but also you've built internal teams to scale new offerings, and you've had bottlenecks, you've had offerings you've had to pull off the table. There's ones that you've accelerated. Give us some context here. Like, from your opinion, you started in the paid media space. I guess that's a great place to start because I'm sure a lot of people listening to podcasts are running paid ads as their first initial service offering. What were some of those initial bottlenecks or hurdles you had to jump in paid media to start scaling up that service offering?
Well, see, the crazy thing is that I came from agency, but I was a part of an agency that was building and growing. And then when I came over to start Structured Social at the time, it was like, I was the guy. I was the one that was building. I was the one that was running ads, and I was the one having the team around me. And then slowly it starts to, you realize you get more leads coming in. And then you're like, okay, well, we already have the templates that we're using at this small size. I would say like under 25,000, under 50,000 a month. You have the ability to get 15 to 20 clients at that space. You're fine. I don't even think that's scaling. Do you think that's 10 to 15 in a team of like 5 or 6? Do you think that's where a lot of people are in this for me to speak to?
Yeah, potentially. You know, I think a majority of people are probably a little bit south of that, depending on their agency. I think a majority of people that are probably listening to the podcast are probably scraping their first 5 to 10, but looking to get to 15 to 20.
Okay. Well, then I think the problems are going to be the same at any size. Like, even right now, like we're running into these problems right now of if we close 5 and the audits are taking too long, or if the people that are doing the audits can't service the actual inbound, then there's a congruency issue of who is talking to me and now who's fulfilling it. At the early stage of 0 to 5, it's a beautiful stage. I love the stage. 0 to 5, 0 to 10 is my favorite. That I think I would restart, no matter how old I am, no matter how many babies I got, I think I would go 0 to 10 over and over again. Because here's why. You're the one that had them come through. You're the one that had the conversation with them and you guys closed. And you're the one most likely leading the strategy with them. awesome. So you're connected from head to toe with what needs to happen, how it needs to happen. You probably have some support. You probably have an offshore person supporting you. You maybe have someone that's junior that's supporting you onshore. You probably have a resource or a tool to do the design work or to do some sort of fulfillment of your thing. And that's a good place to be. You're maybe making a couple thousand bucks a month. There's nothing wrong with that. But the thing that goes wrong is when something in your brain goes, oh shit, this should be bigger. That's when things start to get weird.
100%. Yeah. I mean, and that's where you start bringing on more and more of these clients and complexity starts to enter because whenever you have new people entering, right, you're bringing on new staff that is going to enter in a new layer of complexity, makes things more difficult to scale because they're not doing the same touch points on the account that you are. They don't have the same mindset around strategy that you do. So when you were bringing on those first couple of employees, those first couple of teammates, we were like, all right, going to start building some trust here and I'm going to have to start passing you work. What were some of the initial things that you were doing to make sure that client relationships stayed intact? You guys were still able to deliver a high level service. What were some of those initial things you were doing?
Well, so not even just initial, but what I'm doing now, because I'm very deep in on the creative strategy and the creative department in our current team today. And it's a small team. So I would actually like say if this team I'm currently a part of and running could be its own little business because it does a specific thing, creative strategy delivery. Cool. The team of five. And there's a couple processes that have been hard to trust is you have to actually give them the things that you're using and expect them to not like it or have suggestions and changes over time. But you have to give them the tools that you're using with the understanding that like, if there's something different about this, give it back to me. And what are the changes that you would make? Because when you're the one executing the thing, or if you're like second in command that you taught and gave them everything you need to know is using the tools that you set out, they're not going to have the confidence or feel like they have the ability to speak into you about the tool that you just gave them to do their job. And that thing, that's really difficult to actually allow others to do. And you have to get rid of a lot of this ego. And you go, this is the tool that I'm using to get this job that I'm selling done. Please use this tool. We're going to check in on it, whether that's ClickUp, whether that's Facebook, whether that's a way of running Facebook, a way of running Google, a way of briefing, a way of filming, a way of outbounding to influencers, whatever the service is, I don't care. But whatever that thing that you're using gets out of your usage and other people start to, you have to get that immediate feedback because it's A, going to change. B, you might see it's incredible and you can actually continue to run with it. Or you're sitting here and they go like, how are you even finding success in this? And this conversation about the usage of the tool to deliver the service is so important on initial hire one that goes into initial hire two, I believe.
Yeah, it's always so funny to me because when we hire people, like what's the common thing that we always hear when we're bringing on staff, right? Is like, we're hiring to delegate, right? It's the guru's favorite thing to say, like, oh yeah, you need to delegate more for sure. And the bad thing about delegating is that people feel as if they get the permission to stop training their team. So instead of continuing to work alongside of that media buyer you just brought on, downloading the playbooks into their head, making sure that they have the right training, having the touch points with you to make sure that the client results stay in order. Well, your focus goes somewhere else because you delegated. We did what we were supposed to do. We got it off of our plate. Now we can go focus on the high leverage activities that we need to do. And we don't really need those touch points anymore with the person we just brought on, which is the furthest thing from the truth. You need more touch points. You need more trainings. You need to have a lot of time with your media buyers so they can start thinking like you, so they can start acting like you. And maybe you'll go down this route, but like someone that I think did a really good job of this with you was Taylor Holiday.
He did a really good job because he allowed me close enough to see how it works and operates, but gave the freedom to execute with my own taste and flavor once he realized I wanted it.
Mm.
So I'll even go, when you were speaking, like my heart was getting like started to beat faster because I'm going through this right now. I'm going through this. I'll speak in an offer specifically so that we can go through a real life scenario that's experiencing and happening today. We have an offering, which is UGC and creative development. It's a part of all the offers that we're doing. We've sold paid media. We've sold search. We've sold content packages. We've sold UGC. We've sold email. We've sold all of it together. We've sold part of it together. Like we've sold everything outside of business strategy and consulting.
Which you should be doing.
Which we will eventually be doing. So I feel very confident in understanding what we're selling, where we're selling, and a lot of these things I am selling. So like I'm in this position of understanding the deliverables. This team that I have right now, this littler team that powers or is a part of the larger machine is probably where a lot of partners are hiring right now. It does creative strategy because to create a delivery, and it supports the paid side and it supports the retention side. Very important cog in the overall wheel of the machine. One of my leads is extremely overwhelmed. And this is usually what happens, right? Like you sign. Ah, capacity's felt. I need to hire. Okay, cool. Hire. Let's say you do it perfect, right? Let's say, oh, I'm signing people. I'm also recruiting. Your recruiter found you something. Now I can actually get them onboarded. Cool. Take all this work for me. And the thing you said was like, you offloaded onto them. They're executing, meaning your process should be better because you have more time to service what you currently have, which gives you space to go lean into the person that you just offloaded into, which means that that cycle should actually be healthier. But the issue that's happening right now that I'm trying to determine is the overwhelm with the employee handling the service because it's a broken process, it's a speed issue, it's an offer incongruency of actual deliverable issue, or it's the inability to delegate effectively so that you can do better at your current thing. That's the thing that I'm trying to solve right now. It's crazy to think this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's we fall to the lack of our systems, I think is like one of the famous quotes out there, right?
What'd you get on a fortune cookie this morning or what?
I think I got it from a Cracker Jack box. Yeah, you know, it's so tough, man. Like, because here's the thing. When you're scaling any offering, when you're scaling any business, it comes down to people, right? That is our biggest bottleneck. That's our biggest hurdle. And especially in a service business where the only way to scale is to bring on more people. This is not a SaaS product where we can just multiply. This is a, hey, we're going to have to bring people in and people are imperfect. And unfortunately, we're going to have bottlenecks around people. So we will fall to the level of our systems, our trainings, and our accountability for those departments, right? And with getting the team help, there are always seasons, what we call like stretch seasons, right? Where people are going to feel extremely overwhelmed and you're going to have a high level of work. So my recommendation for this, Shaq, is always if you're looking to create bandwidth for a teammate and you're not sure if it's the right time to hire, it's like, yeah, we have more work, but is it going to be sticky, right? Because we don't make hiring decisions based off of, you know, hopes and dreams and hoping that clients stay around through that initial, say, 90-day window or trial period that they're on for, right? And so one of the best ways to be able to scale this out is bring in some contracting help to kind of alleviate some of that work. And then if it gets sticky, bring them in full time, right? I think we don't utilize our talent pool and our networks enough to bring in people on a contracted basis. And cool, if the revenue does prove out and it proves to be sticky, great, we get to keep them on or we get to bring in someone full time in a full time support role. But why not use more contractors? Why not use people that can kind of come in, help for a season? And then if we need to, we can exit them, you know, no harm, no foul, because it's a 1099. Or if it ends up being sticky and these clients stay around long-term because you guys cracked the code and the support was had, then sweet, we get to bring people on to our team full-time and continue to build and grow and scale those offerings. What are your thoughts on that?
It's what we do to a degree. I think there's some areas that it depends on how you want to run your team. And I'll answer it this way, but I'll actually give like actual examples of this. The issue that I find in strategy work or business intelligence or an area where you need to know the business that you're working on a little bit more intimately than what an intake form can do or what a couple of calls are. When there's areas where like compounding information over a consistent amount of time working with them is important early and fast, it's really difficult to get a contractor up to speed fast enough. If it's oftentimes a creative delivery or a amount of deliverable things, assets, copy, words, videos, edits, like if it's a measurable thing of a delivery of something outside of just like, hey, I did some thinking over the weekend and I think these offer will do good for you. It's really hard to have a contractor come up with this thought-provoking thing unless the incentive is incredible, which usually defeats the purpose of having a contractor to bridge the success of the service. So if that brain dump being said is like, if it's creatively, outsource until you need it so much that you have to bring it in-house. If it's strategy, be willing to pay a little bit more. And I'm going through this right now. Like I need a lead Google person that can be client-facing and execute. If they're just executing it, you don't need to deal with any of the communication or be the face of anything. You can pull anybody you want from anywhere. It doesn't necessarily matter. But you do need to have that person that's front-facing and communicating to kind of be bought in full in.
For sure. Yeah. And I think oftentimes like contractors will be good for some of like that admin type work, the things that don't necessarily require that strategy, like you mentioned. So when you guys are scaling up your agencies and you're needing a little bit more help, you don't always have to jump to the next full-time hire, right? I think that's the point that we're trying to make, is that there will be certain positions, yes, like you need to make the leap, you need to make the jump to a full-time hire, but utilize contractors in the meantime to fill, you know, either project management roles. Because here's the thing, is like when you're a smaller agency and you're expanding, a lot of times you guys have to do a lot of the nuanced work, all of the admin work, you know, uploading, you know, call notes into your project management, updating the project management, right? You can bring people in to do some of that more systemized work where you can create an SOP around it. Whereas in more of that strategy work, well, strategy work is like, hey, it's time in the oven, right? Like you need to have that experience in order to come up with the best strategies, to write the best copy, to put together the best ad format, right? Like that's time in the oven. And those are the positions like you need skilled laborers to do. So know what you're hiring for and understand like, hey, how do we kind of get to that next incremental level of scale in this service offering before you're just jumping the gun on a full-time hire, right? Because that's a big operating expense.
I think there's also something weird about the offer that you're trying to create and the ability for you to service it. It's such a delicate balance, because now as I'm seeing, you have to see both sides. At the beginning, when you're in that 1 to 5, I mean, it can be any size. It can be 1 to 2, depending on contract size or dollar amount. There's a certain point in time where you realize the overwhelm is not worth the dollar. I'd rather have a little bit of my life back. Let's hire. Because that's it. You get to a point where you're making the most money, but you're the most tired. And then it shifts into like, cool, I don't make as much, but I'm not as tired. Like agency game is that yo-yo effect of close it, onboard it, increase it from a client's standpoint and from an employee standpoint. It's just never going to stop. And so one of the cool questions that you asked was, what are the offers that you believe close the fastest? And so you see a little bit more than me. I'm on the front ends on our offer, and I talked to a couple other agencies. But for what are you seeing on your side?
I think creative is one of the easiest things to start with. Now, it's one of the hardest to fulfill on and to deploy. But if you think of it from a productized standpoint, it's like when you go through the McDonald's drive-through, you pay at the first window, and then you get your burger at the second window. Right. And that's kind of how creative is, of like, hey, you're paying at the first window and then you get an asset on the other side. Whereas in things like media buying, it's more like in the air, where it's like you're not getting something physical wrapped up and delivered to you. You know, media buying is more like, hey, you got to kind of trust me here. We're going to put some dollars in this machine called Meta, and it's going to shoot some stuff back out, and we're going to make some money off of it. And it's like, that's a little bit more difficult to sell than, hey, look at this beautiful creative that I have. Like, here's all the examples. You're going to get something that's just like this, right? I think that's easier to sell than media buying. I think retention is easier to sell because there is creative in retention, right? Those are the offers that I think are the most scalable, or not the most scalable, but the easiest to sell right off the bat. Also, like CRO, there's a lot of creative in CRO. Okay, before and after is like, hey, this is what we can do. This is where you're at now. This is where we can take it. Those are the ones that I think are easy foot in the door. If I were to start an agency today, it would probably be in one of those lanes, and then bringing in paid media eventually. In my personal
opinion. I'll even build upon yours, because I'm in a little bit of congruency with you there. Because if you start with a creative deliverable, and it's usually like creative assets, images, motion graphics, usually for paid social or organic social, that leads itself into landing page design and email template design. Essentially, what you're designing on emails is landing pages. So if you get really good at this, it's probably going to be very congruent. So in the creative process, usually in the hiring, you're like, oh, well, I have really good static motion graphic designers. Hey, by the way, can you try to make these things? And it starts to look really, really good as an email template, which then leads itself into, okay, now I need someone technical to help me deploy this as a landing page. So it's kind of like the gateway drug to the agency world right now. And I believe the hard part is when you have international, when you have anybody international or someone creating for you offshore that doesn't understand the core colloquialisms in your region in which you're selling. For instance, you have English and English, but if you're hiring an offshore to create content for you, they sound very different. That's not going to convert as well here. So this has been an interesting problem. Like I had a couple consultants could be like, do you know any Danish copywriters or editors? I'm like, I don't. I wish I did, but I do not. I'm like, damn, like that's a real thing. Like, do you know any Lithuanian page converters? Like, I don't. I'm sorry. I wish I did.
This is a complete tangent, but do you think that's why e-com has don't get me wrong, I think it's still prevalent in the EU, But do you think that's why it hasn't exploded as much? Is because there's so many different languages, cultures that you're having to kind of dance around? I didn't even think about that until right now.
There's so many little shops that crank out 10, 20, 50. There's very few like EU teams that are like 200, half a mil. Like there's very few large shops. They're either like the really, really small. There's no like in between. Like I know there's a couple like the bigger ones, but I don't know any that are like in the millions a year, multi to middle millions a year. I don't know. Do you?
Yeah. Soar with us. Shout out to our boys.
Without if those are like, that's like the one.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's the only one I know. That's
yeah, exactly. You
know, that size. Yeah.
I promise you they're probably sourcing majority of the leads from where? America.
No, actually, the UK.
No way, dude. No way.
Majority of their brands are UK. Yeah, yeah, believe it or not. Now, they're trying to enter the US market for sure. But I think, once again, it comes back to what you said, like the colloquial. How did you say that word?
I'm not going to say it again because I'm not going to repeat it ever.
Colloquialisms. Jeez, old Pete. I haven't used that in forever.
That was a vocab word.
Yeah, it is a difficult word.
It's not a weird tangent. It's not a weird tangent because it's actually very specific to the offerings that they can provide you. Like we have some incredible media buyers that are offshore. They don't need to really speak, but they can't give feedback on creative, which then is a bottleneck. And that goes into servicing. So what we found, so we obviously have paid Google, email, SMS, UGC Creative. The implementation and the consistency of what email provides us, especially around the retention of these people, is so strong that I would say not only would I make creative or content first, I'd actually be on the retention side of things for two reasons. You don't have to go super high retainers. You don't have to convince them on the growth that they're going to see. It's the easiest to find early wins, and you have almost full control. The reason why I would say almost is because you can't control the amount of traffic coming in, but there's just some easy ones. Even me taking over Breeze's email with a small team, just a few things that we've done, not even design heavy in terms of adding a flow, better pop-up. I think that's like literal dollars right there. So finding early wins is really nice on the retention side.
Mm-hmm, for sure. We're kind of running towards the back half of the episode, but I want to ask you one more question about just like scaling out. If you were to start completely from scratch, brand new, what would be your first offering that you would kind of bring to the table as far as scaling?
Easy. Retention. I do retention SMS. And then retention SMS would be, and a part of that, I would sell them separate, the amount of designs.
Okay.
Here's why. Cool. Here's why. Because I'll go even deeper on this. So you can sell flow work. You can sell campaign work. And then you can do different tiers of flow work and campaign work. That could be one-off offering. Okay. Then you have ongoing flow work and A/B testing. There's a price that can be associated with this too. Then it's template build out for them to have or us to continue to use that you then can repurpose on all the other people in their niche or across your other brands done as well. Then that leads you right into, oh, we really understand your retention work. Okay, that could either go into SMS flow if you're on the stateside, or it puts you into pop-up optimization. And oh, by the way, pop-up optimization might be congruent with the page in which we're landing on. Oh, we've been making pages before. We should build a landing page for you. So like the congruency of moving it all the way in, because the last thing I would touch is paid media. This thing, here's why, you probably saw Twitter recently. Like there's a lot of people complaining about the outages that Meta is providing. And there's so many people.
There were overspends today.
Again?
Today, there was overspends. Yeah, yeah. Jordan Menard posted about it.
I think he was supposed to be at it yesterday, no?
Oh, was it yesterday?
Or both days. Okay. It might have been yesterday, but I hope not today. That would be unfortunate. But why? Why I wouldn't do paid media is because it's the same service that everybody else is selling, and so the only difference is the fact that you probably are working with better logos, and so the assumption that they can the inbound person is thinking of is, oh, I am similar to that brand. Maybe they can find success for me because they already did it for that person. When all these things are completely different, especially around margins and movement. So anything new coming and you're actively hitting their credit card with spend, you're going to be consistently top of mind.
I didn't even think about that part. Yeah, that's 100% true. It's like,
so why would I want to be there?
Yeah, you're constantly just ringing them up instead of just like, hey, once a month, a little incognito charge, here you go.
100%. Yeah,
like they're getting hit with Facebook spend. What is it? Like every couple days?
But depends on your threshold, dude. Some people are capped at $500. Some people are capped at $200.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Crazy.
So you kind of have to optimize around, how do I deliver the most without interfering with day-to-day conversations or day-to-day involvement, but still make sure that what I promise I'm delivering. That is the area that I'm trying to solve right now. And to be proactive in a way of communication of, we give your updates on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. On Monday, you get the plan. On Wednesday, you get a progress. On Friday, you get a reflection. Tuesday, Thursday is going to be filled in with something else. So like thinking about the structure of communication within that division or within that agency is something that it's like really top of mind for me, knowing what I know now of where we're at.
Any final thoughts on it?
My final thoughts on it is sell the thing that you know you can sell. That's, but like, no, if you know that you can deliver this thing and you know you can sell that thing, if you know it super well, continue to sell it. And that little bit of overwhelm, I think you can earn yourself a little bit of uncomfortable stretching, a little bit of more profit. If you have a little bit of over-communication at the beginning of going, hey, you're working with me because I'm good at what I do. I need to kind of worry about how my business is growing. Share with them, business owner to business owner. Yes, they want the outcome. Yes, they want the results. That's why you're there. But they also are a human. Share what the fuck you're going through. I think that's extremely important. And a lot of people feel like that's opening up on a vulnerable level where they don't need to know it. It might actually give you the opportunity to make a couple fumbles as you work through things proactively.
Spot on.
Incredible pod again. Joshy, I appreciate seeing you, buddy.
Incredible what?
It was an incredible epi. Some might even say an epic episode. And I think it was an epic episode. Well, thanks for everything, man. Good to see you.
Peace.